Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Turn up your volume. Your volume.
Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast.
Sick Podcast.
With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the spot!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la
bonne!
Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens. Le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked the young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La B.TV. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Wednesday night. It is 1 minute past 10 o'clock. How is everyone doing today? I hope you're doing pretty good. Usually Marc-Andre Perreault joins us on Wednesday nights, and it's actually going to be the case as he will be joining us. I don't see him just yet, and Sammy and Yellow on Master Control, text him the link. That could be it, because sometimes these links, these emails, they go into spam, you know? So I think you're going to have to text him on his cell phone. I think that's the way to do it. In the meantime, it'll be a pleasure for me to talk to you about the Sick Podcast brought to you by La Bite à TB, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. La Bite à TB offers quality microbrewery beers with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. La Bite à TB, embrace your true nature. As a matter of fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and get them more in the camera here so you can see that. Look at that. Huh? You can see them even more now like this, right? It's even better like this, huh? Even better like this. All right, okay. I'm not going to push it anymore because it's going to end up falling off of the table is what's going to happen. All right, okay. Look, it's better now. It's also brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, who have recently been named by Deloitte and CIBC as one of Canada's best managed companies. The country's leading business award recognizing innovative and world-class companies. The best managed Canadian companies designation fuels energy's purpose of creating progress for their customers, their employees, and for communities, of course. Join a winning team. Check out Energy's career page for available opportunities. I've been telling you about them for a while, that this is a winning team, and if you're thinking about a career, Energy Transportation Group, absolutely unbelievable. So brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group and brought to you in part by La Bite à TB, that's brewed in Quebec, winner of a dozen international awards. You have to embrace your true nature with them. Quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients. And also brought to you in part by XL Moto, premier motorcycle and scooter dealership in Montreal for over 20 years. In my opinion, the place in Montreal to buy your Vespa scooter. It's your ultimate destination, your best customer service. They carry 7 different motorcycle and scooter brands, and they're the number one Aprilia and Piaggio ambassadors for the last 5 years in North America. I've been told ahead of Miami, a dealership in Miami. Just imagine how good they are here at XL Moto, XLMoto.com, 5480 Paré. Check them out. And the number to call is 738-6686. Anyway, they're closed right now. It's 10:04 on a Wednesday night. But bookmark their website, xlmoto.com. And you can actually, if you pick up a scooter between now and the end of June, they're throwing in a helmet of a certain value. So give them a call. Talk to the representatives. Talk to Ali or talk to Vito. They're really going to take care of you. Good guys. Good guys. Speaking of good guys, Marc-Andre Perreault, I told you, is a regular every Wednesday night, and he joins me right now. What's going on with you?
How are you, my friend? I'm home.
I'm doing. You're home with the kids.
Yeah, leaving tomorrow for Vegas. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
When did you get home?
Afternoon. I took the red eye after the game on Sunday. So I got in Montreal at like 7:30-ish in the morning and then picked up the kid, came to Gatineau. So, yeah.
All right, good, man.
Life is good.
No, it is. All right, yeah. And tomorrow you're flying out at what time, you said?
I think it's 12:30 or 1 o'clock.
All right, okay. Yeah, that's
through Denver. Good. And yeah, it's going to be nice. Nice series ahead.
Well,
it's not what we expected. We'll have some good hockey.
Nice series because there's a lot of surprises. It's not what we would have put down in our NHL pool, bracket.
But, we all look bad now.
I didn't like this. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't like the second round of the playoffs. I really didn't.
Well, no, it was not. No, it was
which
not.
Which series was good?
Which series was good? Well, I guess Dallas Seattle. I guess.
Okay.
I was kind of disappointed by Edmonton Vegas. It was like that.
Yeah.
And I'm really still wondering what is going on with the Oilers. It's a wasted opportunity. It's second year in a row. Those opportunities do not come back. I don't know. I mean,
well, we're going to find out in about 25 minutes time, because after you, I'm going to go to Jason Greger, who's a contributor to the Daily Faceoff, of course, and dailyfaceoff.com. And they have a podcast as well. And he's got his own show, of course, in Edmonton on the All Sports radio station. And we're going to find out. We're going to talk to him. Obviously, he's very, very close to the situation. We heard from Connor McDavid. Connor McGregor, where'd that come from? We heard from Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl earlier, obviously, and Ken Holland saying that the group is devastated. So, look, I'm going to save this for Jason, but I'll just say this. I'll talk Oilers with Jason. We'll talk other things, you and I. But I'll just say this. I was never high on the Oilers bandwagon. I don't think they're a very complete team. I think they have way too many holes, and they rely on just a couple of players. Too much.
I mean, it's tough not to rely on the two best players. But, I mean, Stuart Skinner is a good guy. I think he's got a bright future. But when you're... Well, I mean, it four times that he's been. How do you say that? That game.
Yeah. He was pulled.
He was pulled four times. I mean, how can you hope anything good when you're pulling your goalie four times in one single playoff season? So
it means you just lost a series. That's what it means. You're not going to win it. Your goalie gets pulled four times in one series. You're losing the series.
I mean. Skinner, I mean, Campbell started as your first goalie. You paid the big bucks to get him, 5x5. Then Skinner is good enough to take the lead, and then he's pulled. It's 3-0, and then they win the game. Why are you going back with Skinner? I mean, I don't know. I can't wait to listen what Jason has to say.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. Hey, not so sure that you saw this, but there were a list of Elliot Friedman told us on 32 Thoughts that there were about 10 to 12 candidates for the GM job with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yes.
That would be going through interviews. And Marc Bergevin took part in the first phase of interviews. Yeah. And then did you hear his most recent report?
I did not.
Well, someone tweeted about it. Let's bring up the tweets. So Friedman named several candidates the Pens interviewed for the GM position on 32 Thoughts. Jason Botterill, Jason Karmanos, Matthew Darche, Steve Greeley, Dan McKinnon, Kate Madigan, Megan Duggan, Eric Tulski, Peter Chiarelli, Mark Bergevin, Sam Ventura, and Cam Lawrence. He adds the Pens are entering phase two of the interviews, and the names he's hearing are Cheka, Darsh, McKinnon, Tulski, and either Greeley or Karmanos. Does that mean Mark Bergevin is out?
Looks like. I'm surprised, because Mark is a good GM. I mean, there's no question he's a good GM. So I'm pretty surprised, but yeah, I don't know.
You know that comment you just made, and I love the fact that you're opinionated. That comment that you just made, a very, very, very innocent remark that Mark Bergevin is a good general manager, and his only experience as a general manager was with the Montreal Canadiens for 9.5 years, because before that, obviously, he was an assistant GM with the Chicago Blackhawks, but he had held different positions as well. But he had one GM job in the National Hockey League, and I bet you right now, on YouTube Live, on Facebook Live, and on Twitter Live, there's a lot of people that disagree.
They have the right to, but I mean, he's won the most, you know, most part of his trades. He made mistakes like every GM makes mistakes. But hey, what is experience? What's the purpose of experience? So, but he was a good GM. I think he just the last years he kind of was overwhelmed by everything, the pressure, the you know, I think pressure did a lot to Marc Bergevin. No, I think he's still a very, very good GM. I think he's a good hockey mind. Yeah.
It's very unfortunate the way things ended. You know, Mark Bergevin came in as one of the most likable general managers the Canadians have had in a long time.
Something happened. I don't know if it took things too personal or I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, like, what was there to take personal? He lasted as general manager of the Montreal Canadiens for 9.5 years. 9.5 years.
It's a century.
Now, let me get this out of the way, okay?
Yeah.
I like Marc Bergevin a lot. I got to know him a little bit. Whenever broke bread together, whenever had wine together, whenever had a meal together. But, you know, we had some conversations. You know, we had some interviews. And he was very cooperative all the time during the interviews. I took a liking to him. I think he was very generous with his answers. That's usually a sign of respect, which was good. If he took some things personal from members of the media, I don't think the media was overly bad with him. I mean,
I don't think so.
I mean, our buddy Brendan Kelly of the Montreal Gazette and What the Puck took it to Mark Bergevin for about 9.5 years. Yes. But was the Journal de Montréal bad with Mark Bergevin? Was La Presse bad with Mark Bergevin? Other than Brendan Kelly, were the articles in the Gazette bad on Mark Bergevin? Were the radio stations in Montreal bad on Mark Bergevin? Were the TV stations covering sports and covering the Canadiens bad for Mark Bergevin? I don't think so. I don't think so.
I think he mentioned at some point that, you know, it was just too much or whatever. But it was a lot of pressure. Like the expectations are so high in Montreal. So probably that, you know, you sign a contract and then everybody say it's a bad contract. Now you're second guessing yourself and you take it personal or I don't know. But the truth story is that the Montreal press and the fans were not hard on Marc Bergevin. Something happened. I mean, you know, sometimes it was just time to move on. I think that's the case, but still he's a great GM. Like, he gave some bad contracts, but he also gave like very good contracts to the team, good trades. So maybe, you know,
great, all about experience. Great great is a big word. And I don't want to lack any respect to him, but great's a big word.
Great what?
He's a great GM. Great is a big word. That's a big word to use. It usually gets associated with general managers that have teams that win Stanley Cups.
Well, let's say then he's a very good GM. But, you know, what's the difference between not winning the Stanley Cup and winning the Stanley Cup when you're playing the final? When Kreider, isn't it like 9 years ago, like today, that happened? Montreal could have won the Stanley Cup. So it's a fine line between. So when you win a cup, now you can say you're a great GM, but before that, you can't. I don't know.
Well,
it's not. I mean, no, I don't agree with that. It's such a fine line.
I think
with 31 teams today, you can't judge on the rings like it was the case before.
Let's do this. We're going to have fun now, okay?
Okay.
Name me
David Poile.
Give me three great GMs.
Great GMs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, David Poile did a great job.
Okay. Iserman?
Sweeney, Iserman. Well, Julien Brisebois, obviously.
Okay. Jim Nill?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah.
Well,
depends on what great is. That's the question. But
the reason why I ask is now so we threw out three, four, five names. All right.
Yeah.
And so if they're great GMs and Mark Bergevin is a great GM, then he's in that category. That's why I say like great is a big word, but I think Bergevin, look, I think he obviously did some great things. He did some average things. He did some not so great things. He had some great years, not so great years. I think his player evaluation skills are very, very high. Very, very big, very, very strong, very, very good. And when he made individual trades, and unfortunately, the ball was dropped on trading Sergachev for Drouin. But as Marc Bergevin once told me, Tony, if you want me to bat for 1,000, I'm not going to bat for 1,000, and I'll take that. Obviously. Okay, I'll take that. So I think he's great at evaluating talent and making trades. Like he won, I think, like a vast majority of his trades. I believe he won them. The problem was the assembling of a team and managing the people in order to keep a team together. When he didn't get his number that he wanted in a contract negotiation, the negotiations went sour, the relationships went sour, and usually the player was gone. It happened with Radulov. It happened with Pacioretty. It happened with Dano. It happened with Markov. Now, in Pacioretty's case, at least the Canadians got a number one centerman back.
Yeah, and I mean that's let's not put Pacioretty in that same category because it was more than that. So, but Dano to me was like his biggest mistake, you know. But I think it was just too emotional, maybe. But that being said, it's not, you know, it's one of his quality.
He didn't want to manage Subban any longer. Right?
Well, who wanted?
You know, I mean, he traded him. It's not because Nashville called him and offered Shea Weber. He was placing the phone calls. He was trying to trade PK Subban.
Didn't he win that trade like hands off, hands out, you say?
It all depends which way you look at it. I mean, both players ended up going to the Stanley Cup final. Both players did not win the I think he won it. I'll tell you that. I think he won the trade. Okay. But like I said, it all depends on who you're asking and how you look at it, right? Both players went to the Stanley Cup final. Both players did not win the Stanley Cup. Both players retired early. Yeah,
but
he lost a more entertaining player who was a fan favorite.
Okay, but you want a captain. You want a guy who was respected, who, you know, he was an example for the kids, and, you know, it's going to grow. I'll tell you this. I love PK. Like, he's been always very good with me, but to me, it's not even close. So, but you want that trade? Like, Gallagher's a bad contract.
Yeah.
You know, but still.
The contracts, Travis Mullen got a lot of money. David Desharnais got a lot of money. Gallagher got a lot of money. Carey Price got a lot of money.
Yeah, but Carey would have got that money somewhere else. So.
I don't know about that. He was the first GM to give a goalie $10.5 million.
Yeah.
But it's easier said than done to part ways with a goalie that had just come off a season where he won four individual awards, right? So now, but now I'll tell you this. When it was time to put together a team that can take a run at it, for a team that never went through a rebuild, he went all in 2 years ago and he got that team to the Stanley Cup final. And for that, he deserves a lot of credit. So I'll take a look at the good. I'll take a look at the not so good. I'll take a look at the, you know.
I still say he was a great GM. So,
yeah.
He's a nice person. He just...
I always got along with
him. He just needed a change, I think. And good for him. I hope along with him. Good. I hope that one day he'll be back as a GM. I think he deserves it.
Yeah, no, and I'd love to see him get another GM job in the National Hockey League as well. I think that I think it's unfortunate that he cut ties with a lot of media who I think were good to him.
It's what he needed, I guess. Can't blame the guy.
Well, I mean, it's
I don't know. Sometimes it's just too much. I don't know. It's a big market. You know that.
I know that. I know, but when I say cut ties, I mean, we're almost 2 years later. I mean, he could start talking to people again. No.
He has his reason, I guess. I don't talk to him, so I can't say.
No, and neither do I. I'd love to talk to him to say, you know what, what happened here? Like, you know, like
he doesn't want to talk about it. I'm sure about that.
Yeah.
Montreal, he just turned the page and it's over. He doesn't want to go back.
Look, I don't know how he lasted 9.5. Could you imagine lasting 9.5 years in Montreal with the expectations and the pressure? Like, it's very sometimes when I think of Carey Price's career with the Canadiens, 15 years the goalie of the Montreal Canadiens. Like, could you imagine how?
Can you imagine
training and difficult that must be?
Can you imagine in Toronto right now?
In Toronto right now, it must be
in Montreal. You don't have the sun. You don't have critics are big, and it's big. Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, they're taking a beating. I'm sure it's worse Toronto than Montreal, media wise. I'm sure, and I can't tell you that Edmonton can be pretty hard.
I haven't talked to you since Toronto battle versus the Florida Panthers. What would you do? There's a lot of talk of you know, having to make a move in that market, whether it's firing Brendan Shanahan, whether it's firing Kyle Dubas, whether it's firing Sheldon Keefe, whether it's trading a player of that core four. What would you do?
I think you have no choice but take a look at your core. I mean, there's some pattern that comes back every playoffs. And I don't know, you can't expect the same results if you're playing the same way than you're playing in regular season. So it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You see it in Toronto. You see it in Edmonton. We saw, I know it was way closer, but you saw with Boston, it is not the same ball game. It's not the same. So if you have Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, who's great players, probably great person as well, but it's not guys, they don't, you know, I was covering Edmonton last series and I was like, Edmonton, they have the possibility to take the decision to win the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. And then I recall that, you know, that story when the Islanders did beat the Oilers, like, early 80s. And, you know, that story that Wayne Gretzky and the Oilers, like, went through the hall, and then they saw in the dressing room the guys of the Islanders, like, hurt and with pain and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they realized they had to suffer to win the cup.
Yeah.
I think these guys do not want that. That's what I think. So
80, 81, 82, and 83, the New York Islanders won four consecutive Stanley Cups, and then the Edmonton Oilers came back and won it in, or the Oilers won in 84, 85, 87. They won it in 87. Did they win in 88 as well?
88 is Calgary? No. Calgary is 89.
Yeah. Canadians
Montreal,
were
86.
Okay. Yeah. Well, must have been Oilers won
the Oilers.
The Oilers won it in 1990 again after.
Okay.
Did they not?
But I watched, like, look at the lineup of the Oilers and look at the lineup of the Maple Leafs.
Oilers won in 88. They beat the Bruins. Yeah, they beat the Bruins in 88. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, you have, like, McDavid, Draisaitl, they're somewhere else. But, yeah, Zach Hyman, who's a great hockey player, he was hurt. Nugent Hopkins, I don't know. Evander Kane was hurt. Like, compared to last year, I mean, he was invisible. You had, like, Bjugstad is not a bad hockey player.
Yeah.
Ekholm, CC, Nurse, he earns, like, too much money, but he's still a good D. Kulak was not bad. So, I don't know. They have
Darnell
pretty
Nurse
much everything.
Much better.
Yeah. Darnell Nurse's problem is that he makes 9.25. That's his biggest problem.
I hear that's, I wish I had those problems.
Same here. But, who signed that contract?
Yeah.
By the way?
Yeah.
Can't you sign that contract?
Smart guy.
Him. So yeah, but like, give him $5 million and no problem. You won't hear, like, no complaints. But just to say that they have a good lineup. Look at the Maple Leafs; they have a good lineup. So it's something else.
Yeah, but you know, there's a difference between a regular season lineup and a playoff lineup, which we'll discuss with Jason Gregor in a couple of minutes here.
Yeah, sorry.
Before we do, don't worry about it. Did you see Leighton Hudson's goal earlier today at the World?
I did not.
Austria?
I did not. I was in the pool with my son.
I don't blame you, but I like to go in the pool too. But they win. They beat Austria by a score of 4-3, which is Oterish. Because I'll always remember for the rest of my life that Austria is Oterish, because I was MC once, an award ceremony.
Oh yeah.
And it was amateur soccer award ceremony and, recreational teams. And one team, every team had the name of a country. And one team was Team Austria, but I was doing the emceeing in French.
Okay.
And I said, l'équipe de l'Austrie. And then the gentleman next to me said, Autriche. L'Austrie.
That's being bilingual.
Oh my God, what an internet. But anyway, he kind of, like, the guy went around three or four guys like they weren't even there. And then he had to poke at it to take one hand on the stick, put one hand on the stick and took a poke at it and was able to score. He also had an assist. Man, the kids got tools, man. The kids got tools.
I told
man.
You. Him and Logan Mailloux, despite what Simon Boisvert is telling you, I think those two are the real deal.
Yeah, like Steak Bavair believes he's overrated, and he did what he did in junior hockey because he's a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
But he turned 20 like less than a month ago. He actually did the entire season as a 19-year-old.
I respect his opinion, but I agree with me. That
yeah, I understand, that of course.
But anyways, Lane Hudson, last year at the, it was not the rookie camp, but like the, whatever you call it, the camp.
Development camp.
He was somewhere else. Hands, like the vision, skills, he was like that. But you know, he's gonna grow up, and he is, I mean, like, people can be excited about him. You never know what can happen. Like, there's a lot.
Yeah, speaking of excited, a lot of people in Quebec probably getting excited last night, much to Arizona's chagrin, thinking, you know what, maybe there's a chance here. But we also heard that Houston was a front runner. Now, earlier tonight, we're hearing that the National Hockey League is whispering in people's ears saying, Arizona's not going anywhere, man. We're going to find a way. They're going to stay in Arizona.
I'm shocked. Like, I can tell you that the league, like during second round, the worst case scenario was what's happening right now. So you put hockey, like teams in TV market, okay?
Yeah.
But these markets doesn't grow. So now...
And Arizona is considered one of those TV markets, correct?
Fifth in the U.S.
Fifth in the U.S. for TV market.
Yeah.
And I know, then, who wants to watch hockey in a place where it's 40 degrees all the time and they don't even have ice in their freezers?
I already told you the exact same thing on that podcast. It's nice wanting to grow the game, but don't forget the people who are already there. Don't lose them, because if you lose them, you're going to lose a lot.
There's been a lot of instability within their ownership group over the years. Some relationships have gone sour, and you need a stable ownership group. You need to get involved at the grassroots level. You need to get involved with minor hockey. You need to revamp the area that you're going to be in. And their ownership group was never able to do that. And besides, they've been in a rebuild for 8,000 years. Like, at one point you got to get out of it.
Look what happened. What's happening right now in the queue in Quebec City.
Yeah.
Like, stop it with the, there's not enough corporate, there's not enough this, there's not, but there's passion. There's people that want hockey. So anyways, I just don't get it. And you know what? That's probably why I'm not millionaire and I don't own a hockey team, but I just don't get it. Like, keep on trying to go and market that. At the end of the day, you don't really want them to succeed because the ratings are going to be bad. But who, like, go ask like Rogers, Sportsnet, and TVA Sport if they're happy with the Final Four. Like, really? Like, is it good for the game? Tell me that Dallas, Vegas, Florida, Carolina is good for hockey. It is not.
All right, I want to read this to you before we go. From Xavier A. Gutierrez, president and CEO of the Arizona Coyotes, to our PAC. While we are very disappointed Tempe voters did not approve the proposed entertainment district, we want to thank all of our loyal fans who supported the Coyotes over the years. Your loyalty is what makes our PAC strong. During the 23-24 season, the Arizona Coyotes will play at Mullet Arena. That's their 5,000-seat arena, by the way. In addition, we remain committed to Arizona and have already started re-engaging with local officials and sites to solidify a new permanent home in the Valley. We look forward to sharing more with you in the coming weeks. I find this... it's not fun to lose a franchise, but... The NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball would be a lot less patient with Arizona than the National Hockey League has been. I mean, this is just, we're on chance number, 823 now.
The day they will lose real hockey fans, passionate, because they're tired of that crap, they're going to have a bigger problem. But who am I?
Give me your predictions, Final Four. Who do you got and how many games?
I'm going to go with Vegas.
And why?
Vegas 6 or 7, because I watch them and you kind of fall in love with the team you're covering because you see the good things, you see them winning. So yeah. I know Dallas is good, but I'll go with Vegas 6 or 7 because they're very, like, very complete. And can't go against Florida. I just can't. They're on a roll. They're playing like FU hockey, and so I know it's probably like
But I mean that. Look, any prediction at this point is a good prediction, right? Let's be honest here.
But
you know, you wonder how much gas Dallas has left in the tank. All right, enjoy yourself, and you and I will talk soon. Be well.
Hopefully, my friend.
All right, there you
have
it.
Say hi to everyone.
I will. Mac, it's done. Mac André Perrault of TV Sport. We are live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And I bring in my buddy. We used to work for the same company back in the day. He's still there. And he hosts his own show on 1260 out of Edmonton. And he's part of Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, and the podcast and the website and all that stuff. Jason Greger, what's going on?
Tone, what's happening, man?
My God, you look younger every time I see you.
Hey, you know what? Healthy living, Tony. Healthy living. Vodka a day.
Yeah, I like the background, by the way. It's a nice setup. You can tell that you have experience in podcasting, by the way. You can just tell. I just take a look at the background, and I know I see it right away. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, there you go. Thank you. My my wife helped build that, so she designed it. I got to give her all the credit.
She, my friend, is a keeper.
Yes, she very much is.
Hey, a lot of people have been saying that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are keepers as well. Generational players, franchise players, probably the two best players in the game. It's pretty amazing when Connor McDavid said earlier in these playoffs that on some nights, Leon Draisaitl is the best player in the world. And you know what? He wasn't kidding. He's right. But unfortunately for them, they were eliminated. They were eliminated versus the Vegas Golden Knights. So before we find out why they were eliminated and get your thoughts on what they had to say in their exit interviews, I'll ask you this. Did you think they were going to be Vegas?
Yeah, I thought they would beat Vegas, to be honest. And, you know, like after four games, it was a very odd series because both teams had kicked the hell out of the other team in two games. Edmonton dominated games two and four, and Vegas spanked them in games one and three. And then if you actually look at games five and six, the Oilers issue that I've talked about for a long time reared its ugly head again. And the Edmonton Oilers, you know, people will look at the underlying numbers and possession and shot totals and everything like that, and all favored Edmonton. But Edmonton's problem early in the year was they played Santa Claus too often, and they would gift teams goals. And they gave up three goals in a minute and a half in game five in the second period. And then they got dominated home in the second period, gave up three goals in game six. Now, if you look at period one and period three, and you'll see all the possession time and all the shots and everything else, it's totally in their favor. But the game 60 minutes, and I really think that's why there was legit pain in the voice of the Oilers after that series loss, unlike anything I've seen. Like, they went farther last year. Now, granted, they got swept by Colorado in the second round. Colorado was a juggernaut in the third round. They're the best team, and they deserve to win. Edmonton wasn't close to them. Mm-hmm. But and I think Edmonton's team this year, top to bottom, is actually better than last year's, and they didn't go as far. Vegas is a good team, don't get me wrong. But the Oilers, their Achilles heel was they beat themselves too often. They try a pretty pass here or there. They got a guy cheats at the wrong time and it gives up an odd man rush. You know, somebody busts the coverage in their D zone. And I think this loss, Tony, is as strange as it's this is the loss. I think if the Oilers are ever turning it around and winning, they're gonna look back on this one because this one kicked them in the junk repeatedly. Because they believe they were a good team, and they were a good team. They had the second best record in the second half of the season. They finished winning 14 of 15 games and dominating not just on the power play, but also on 5-on-5. But in this series, in those two periods, they reverted back to what they did earlier in the season, and they gave up. They don't give up a lot of shots, but when they give up a chance, Tony, it's like a 10-bell chance. So if the other team's giving you lots of fours and fives, well, who cares? It looks good on the stats, but if you're continually giving up a 10 spot, well, guess what? You're going to lose because you're giving the other team a better chance to score.
My buddy Peter and Coach St. Luke, a couple of years ago, the Canadians are down 3-1 to the Toronto Maple Leafs in the playoffs, and he gives me a call and he says, double shift your best players. And that's what Montreal did at the time. Their best players were their top four defensemen, and they were double shifting them all the time. And luckily for the Canadians, Toronto wasn't listening to Peter because they didn't double shift their best players. And Montreal did. Montreal came back. They won the series. Having said that, I find that every time I watch the Oilers games, and I mean, other than having the stats that McDavid and Draisaitl play about 25 minutes a game, It just seems like they're out there every other shift. It just seems like they're out there for extended shifts. It just seems like they are incredibly reliant on these two players. And, you know, you can come back and answer me, well, if you're going to be reliant on two players, you might as well be reliant on two of the best players in the world, if not the two best. And I get that, and I understand that, but playoff hockey is different than regular season hockey, and maybe it works in the regular season, but it doesn't work in the playoffs, Jason.
Yeah, I think next season the Edmonton Oilers head coach Jay Woodcroft, I think he has to throw the crutch away, and the crutch is going and loading up McDavid and Draisaitl. If you actually look at their minutes in the LA series, you know, it's 21 minutes a game. Those guys can play 21 minutes, I have no problem. You get up to 23 or 4 in non-overtime games, I think that's an issue. Now, Connor McDavid played 24 minutes in game 6 because, and he only played 5 in the first period, by the way. So it was the third period, I think he played 11 minutes because they were trailing. So they're going for it. Fine.
Yeah.
But I think next season for this team, there's a few things that have to happen. A, they got to eliminate the gift goals, right? Play smarter. And I think if I'm the coach, I am not going to the McDavid Draisaitl unless I'm down a goal and I need it. And because I get it, hey, it's a good nuclear weapon, but it's also a crutch at times. And you've got to empower everybody else. The Oilers' best line.
Young coach was trying to endear himself to his superstars. You know what I mean? Yeah, just put him up there.
A little bit. Like, they are good, and I understand why you play them lots. Like, you know, Gretzky, when the Oilers won, Glenn Sather used to play him 27 minutes a night sometimes. So, you know, you can do it. But I really felt the McLeod, Fogle, Derek Ryan line might have been the Oilers' most consistent line. And you got to play those guys more. Oilers' depth guys, you look at their production, Tony, in the regular season, it was fine. They had 12 guys, if you include Nick Bjugstad, who had at least 10 goals. Like the Oilers were the fourth highest scoring team 5-on-5. Like, their power play is ridiculous, and it killed it. But they could score. Defending was their issue. And McLeod and Fogle spent a lot of time in the offensive zone with Derek Ryan. And I think next year, you know, McLeod's a little bit year older, but you've got to empower a few more guys in the team. And you also just have to say McDavid and Draisaitl are two of the best players in the league. We're keeping them apart. We'll play the odd shift here and there together, coming off a penalty kill, no problem. But we're not going to go to them too early in a series because the Oilers don't have a second-line center. Nugent Hopkins is not a second-line center. He's a winger. Like, they played Nick Bjugstad there, and God love Nick Bjugstad, but he's not a second-line center.
No.
So I think that was something that I felt that wasn't great. The other thing was, Tony,
so
I would have played Jack Campbell.
So Draisaitl a winger too?
No, he's a center. And he plays center most of the year. Like, him and McDavid in the regular season only played 28% of their 5-on-5 time together. Right?
I asked you because I lost something in translation here. I think you said they don't have a second line center.
Yeah, when
they put them together. Okay, I got it now. All right, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And those are, you know, those are guys you can go get on the market. The challenge is that not everyone wants to sign not everyone who's a free agent wants to sign in Edmonton, you know?
Well, actually, Tony, if you look at Edmonton the last 5 years, how many teams have signed big name free agents as them? You go back to Andre Secker was the highest sought after free agent as a defenseman in 2015. Now, I didn't like the signing, don't get me wrong, but Milan Lucic was highly sought after by a lot of people.
Yeah,
Zach Hyman, a really good signing.
Yeah.
Right? Evander Kane at $5 million, like, they're not overpaid. Hyman and Kane are actually really good value contracts at $5 million. So, you know, Matthias Ekholm.
Yeah, but in Kane's case, I think he signed with Edmonton because they're the only team that wanted to sign him to take on the baggage.
And that's fair. But then remember, he was a free agent again. Right. And Ken Holland said, you can go see, and no one was willing to pay them more than what Edmonton offered. And he was like, well, I'll just stay in Edmonton then.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuart Skinner.
Very good season for a rookie. But here's the thing, Tony,
I never bought in though. Like for me, it was like, you know, it was Steve Penny all over again, 1984. But I just, you know, I had a feeling that the air was going to come out of the balloon at one point.
Well, and see, I don't blame a goaltender when you put him in a situation that he hasn't been in before. The most games he played consecutive all regular season was 6. Now you get to the playoffs. Like, look at the Boston Bruins. Linus Ullmark, he's going to win the Vezina. He played 2 consecutive games from December 15th on. And then all of a sudden they played him every night in the playoffs. Like, I think it's ridiculous when teams suddenly veer away from what they did. Now, when you had Carey Price and other guys who were playing 60 to 65 games, that's different. because they were used to playing all the time.
Yeah.
You had a rookie goalie who had been
Lundqvist.
Yeah, Henrik Lundqvist. You know, you don't see that anymore, right? The game's different. Goalies, you got to work harder now as a goalie because there's so much more side-to-side passing. Guys, they got to move harder, right? There's very few goalies that play that many
starts. Game's faster. Game's faster,
Totally.
Yeah.
So I think teams, it's going to be a slow process. Now, Florida's doing it, and Bobrovsky's out of his mind, right? He's playing unbelievable. He's back to Vezina Bob. But Stuart Skinner was a rookie, and I said it after game five, after he got pulled and Jack Campbell came in and played unreal. I know the game was, they weren't winning the game, but he played great. I'm like, I get it's a risk, but the risk of Stuart Skinner as a rookie struggling, and he didn't cost them the game, but he also didn't make a big save. And I thought, and I don't blame him. They didn't lose the series because of Stuart Skinner. I felt that they got away from, you know, overplaying guys, and hey, maybe Jack Campbell would have struggled.
Hey, but well, by the
Stuart
way, well,
Skinner had an 885 Tony going in. It's not like this guy was lighting it up.
And Campbell, in the four games that he played, albeit of the final 18 Oilers games of the season, I think he had a save percentage somewhere like 930 or something like that, I read.
Yeah.
Like he was 4-0.
Yes. Jack Campbell, he was very inconsistent to start the year. Then he got into January when Skinner was away from the team. Him and his wife welcomed the son, and he took some time off, which was awesome. And he played 9 in a row, or started 8 of 9, I think, or 9 of 10. And he played really well. And that kind of got the Oilers back on track, because at that time they were floundering a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he got inconsistent again. And, you know, I think Jack Campbell's struggles were a little bit between the ears more than anything else. He actually did change his equipment midseason, which doesn't happen very often. And I think it helped him because he got some newer pads. So his old pads, he tried to absorb all the rebounds. Well, goalies don't play that way anymore. Now they want the rebounds to be bouncier, so he would kick them out 6 or 7 feet. Right. Remember, Tony, when we were little, you wanted the goalie, the rebounds, you just swallow them up. Well, the goalies don't play that way anymore. You want to kick it out just the way they're shooting. And I thought they would have went to Campbell. There's no guarantee they would have won. Right. There's no guarantee at all. I'm not saying that. But I felt that was a decision that would have benefited the team to go with Campbell in game six.
Yeah. Alfred Vega says signing a second line centerman. Good luck with that. And I wrote back, L.A. did it with Phil Deneau. It happens.
Yeah, Edmonton doesn't need a second line center, Tony. They got one. They have the best second line center in the league. Just keep them there.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you, because when you put those guys together, you know, as much as they're great, and every now and then they're going to win their battles. But if I'm a coach on the other team, I have a lot less worrying to do, because now all I got to do is I got to put a shutdown line on them, and then the rest of the game versus the other lines, I really don't have to worry. But if you have those two guys on two different lines, man, I'm trying to put a shutdown line versus McDavid's line. I'm trying to put a shutdown line versus Drysdale's line. And my shutdown line might end up being my better players. So now all of a sudden, or, you know, if it is, now I got to rely on my third and fourth line guys to win me a game. Instead, if it's my third and fourth line guys that are shutdown guys, then I don't have my offensive players on the ice as much as I'd want to. It just becomes such a headache when you have two stars on two different lines. Malkin and Crosby didn't play together when they won cups. They played together on the power play, but they centered two different lines. And that's the way
funny,
you do it,
Tony. In the, you know what? I actually went back. In the regular season, they were actually each other's most common line mate. But then each year at the trade deadline, they added guys like Bill Guerin and Hossa, and they got better wingers. And you're right. Come playoff time, they were separate. And I think that's what Edmonton needs to do. Last year, Drysdale was injured, so I get it. But when they're healthy, I'm sorry. Say, guys, I'm keeping you separate. We've got Evander Kane. We've got Zach Hyman. We've got Nugent Hopkins. We've got some legit top six wingers. Like those guys, the Oilers, look at, like, Hyman had almost 90 points. Nugent Hopkins had 100. You've got some guys who can produce points here. Evander Kane, you know what? Even injured, was still on pace for 35 goals again this year. So they've got enough good top six guys. They need another top six right winger in an ideal world. But even if it's a complimentary winger, that's what they need. And I think they just, the coach next year, I think, have a little bit more faith in your bottom guys. And so your big guys will still be your big guys when need be, because your best players still win in the playoffs. I don't care what anyone says. All the numbers back it up. You need some, you know, you need a Jordan Martinook to play out of his mind for a series, and that's nice. But realistically, you're going to win with your best players 99% of the time.
All right. Okay. Let's go to the, those exit interviews, and let's hear from Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid.
It's all about winning. It's about winning we've been fortunate enough to have won personal awards. You know, no one cares about that. No one's writing about that in the media right now, about Hart trophies or whatever it is. You know, everyone's talking about how teams are moving on into the conference finals, the finals. You know, that's what we want to do.
I think for us too, just understanding, you know, how far away it is just to be back in that very same position, you know. And then we all got to go home and train all summer long and come back and go through camp and play 82 more regular season games just to get back to the very same spot. And just understanding that when you're in the, when you're there and you're playing in the series, it's, you got to do anything to keep it going or win a game.
All right, there you have it. Leon Draisaitl and says, you know, nobody cares about Hart trophies right now and individual awards and stuff like that. They care about which teams moved on. Ken Holland, I think, went on to say that the group was devastated. Eh? So what did you take? What one comment did you most take out of the exit interviews, and who did it come from?
Man, I'll be honest, Tony, and I've covered these for a long time. The combination of Draisaitl, you know, McDavid had one, but Matthias Ekholm, there was a few things that stood out. So Draisaitl's comment about, you know what, we just basically, like, we beat ourselves too often. And it comes down to, you know, giving the other team easy goals. And Edmonton's did that too often. So I liked hearing that from a leader. And then Matthias Ekholm said, you know what, when I was in Nashville, we didn't have the offense. So we had, our best players were defense. And so we play sound defense, and then we'd hope we could capitalize on some chances. And you know, that got us to one Stanley Cup run, but we didn't have what Edmonton has. You can't walk around the corner and just pick up the two best players, but you can play better defense, and you have to get comfortable knowing you don't always have to outscore the opposition to win, right? That you don't have to, you know, it's, we can win the game. You don't have to lose the game. And that was the comment, I think, from him, who's a veteran defender, who knows how to play defense, was a huge addition to the team. And I really believe, listening to Hyman and McDavid and Draisaitl, like they were gutted, Tony. Like, even here it is, that was Tuesday. They lost on Sunday. And usually players have, like, the next day when a series is over, that's when they talk. The Oilers took a day off because their team was just gutted. And even talking to them the next day, like, you could tell this one, like, it was pain, like real pain. They felt they were a good team. They didn't reach their expectations, and they don't have anybody to blame but themselves, and they didn't try to make excuses, right? Like, Ken Holland was, hey, give Vegas credit. They beat us. They finished higher in the regular season by 2 points. They're the more consistent team all year long. And he's right. They were. And so, you know, Zach Hyman said, we can't just wait until the second half, because if we play well in the first half, well, now we have home ice advantage. So there's a lot of big picture stuff. You know, Hyman said, and he's lost some series, as you know, in Toronto. He said he's never felt this bad after a series ever. And I believe him. And just watching their body language. So, like I said, I think this is, like, you know, you go back in history, you know, the Oilers talked about losing to the Islanders in 83, and that was a big moment for them. And, you know, the Penguins lost in 08 in the Cup final, and that was a big moment for them. And, you know, Chicago lost in the conference final in 09, and that was a big moment for them. They're not the, Tampa Bay got swept in 2019 when they won 62 games. And then they came back and won two consecutive cups and went to a third in a row. Now, Boston, I'm not sold that Boston can repeat that. But Edmonton is a team, because their core is all in place. They're not going out there and losing a lot of guys. There'll be some small tweaks, maybe on the blue line and then a right winger. But for the most part, their best guys are there. Their depth guys are there. And I would expect them in the regular season, Tony, to not, if they can show in the regular season that they've learned not to gift goals as much of a frequency as they did, then I think they can be a dangerous team. But if they go through the regular season again and they're outscoring teams and they're winning, but they're giving up four all the time and they're winning 5-4, then I don't think they can win in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, I don't think goalies win Stanley Cups anymore.
No, I agree.
But there are goalies, you know, they, for example, I mean, Bobrovsky, with the way he's playing, is a big reason why Florida is where they are. And goalies still have their say, all right? And ultimately, I think Toronto got eliminated because they got goalied. And I think Edmonton would have gone on had they had a better goalie. So my question to you is, does a goalie become priority number one for the Oilers? If not, what position are they looking at? What kind of player are they looking at?
Yeah, I don't think it is, because I think they're pretty high on Skinner, and they really feel that Jack Campbell, like a lot of free agents, will be better in year two. A lot, you know, you can go around the league, look at Huberdeau, look at Markstrom when he signed a lot, and those are just guys near in Calgary down the street. But you know, there's lots of guys on big tickets their first year, not all, but some who have pressure. So now Campbell, by the way, he's never going to be elite in my eyes, and I don't think he has to be elite. He just has to be 905.
Well, but there's two things that have to happen. Okay, this is what I've learned. If you have a good goalie and not more than that, if you want the goalie to play really good hockey like Linus Omark did, you have to either put a really good team in front of him, or a really good defense in front of him, or a really good system in front of him. The years that Columbus used to have the goalies, they used to have the best stats in the league. They were benefactors of the system, of the coaching. The Bruins, I think Omark this year was the benefactor of playing in front of a really good team in front of them. And a really solid team. Like, Edmonton can give Skinner 3 goals if he's in net, but on a lot of nights, he can give up 4 or 5. So, I mean, if they're not going to replace their goalie, don't you think they need another really good defenseman or a really good shutdown player?
I think they're looking on the right side. I think ideally they would like a top 4 right defenseman. I think they'll explore a potential trade, you know, Cody Ceci, and, you know, they'll have to obviously sweeten the pot or something like that. I really think, Tony, it comes down, because if you actually look at the Oilers had the 3rd highest expected goal save percentage in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
3rd highest. Their problem was, so overall they would give up, they'd keep to the outside, and then, oh, by the way, now we're going to give up 3 bang bang chances, and that would kill them. And so that's why I think their system will improve, that because neither one of their goalies are there yet. Stuart Skinner, he's so young, I can't say for sure, because goalies, man, I can't predict, like, from year to year, who knows, outside of maybe 5, right? And you don't know what they're going to be. So Skinner just has to be decent. He doesn't have to be all world. He just has to be decent, right? Which he thought he was when Campbell played really well. Like, the Oilers, if you look at their record, Tony, in games where their goalie just has a 900 save percentage, not 920, just 900, and they're dominant. So, and some of those nights, though, when their goalie's letting in 4 goals on 22 shots, it looks terrible save percentage. But then you go look at the chances, and you're like, well, they gave up 22 shots, but they gave up 11 quality scoring chances. And that's what, so I think it's systemic, and I think it's more of a, just a determination, a dedication, and a commitment to be sound defensively. Because as Ken Holland said today, anybody can play defense,
but you
have to commit to doing it.
All right. So, you know, what's being said about Ken Holland? Like, what did you talk about today on your radio show when it got to Ken Holland? What did you say?
Well, for me, Tony, I look at the team he inherited. So Ken Holland's been here 4 years. They made the playoffs 4 years. The team he inherited had missed the playoffs the previous 2 years. They were 25th in the NHL with McDavid, with Draisaitl, with Nurse, with Nugent Hopkins, their 4 core guys, right? So they were 25th. They were terrible. Since then, they've improved every year. I look at the moves. So he brought in Zach Hyman, pretty good contract. Brought in Evander Kane, traded for Brett Kulak for a 2nd-round pick. That's been unreal. Brett Kulak's the last 2 playoffs has been phenomenal. He was arguably
I wish he would have played more, because on many nights they were playing 4D, 4.5.
Yeah, he should. I like Brett Kulak. I think he's a really solid defense. Did you know he's only one of 5 guys?
There was a game where they played 11 forwards and 7D, but they were actually playing 4.5D. You know, like Kulak was playing half a game. Desharnais wasn't, you know, he doesn't play much at all.
Well, you know what? I'll say, we'll get to Desharnais in a second. You brought it up, because I'm actually a big fan of his. But I look at the Ken Holland. When you look at the team, when he came in, he said, we got to get bigger and we got to get faster. And so now you are 4 years later. They got Hyman, Kane. They got Clean Costin for Samorikov. That's a steal of a trade. They brought in Nick Bjugstad for nothing. He's 6'6". He actually played well. Ekholm, Desharnais on the back end. You know, like Mike Smith, people ripped about Mike Smith. Go look at Mike Smith's numbers for 2 years. He had the sixth best save percentage in the NHL. You know, he had a 913 in the playoffs for $2 million. Like that was a steal of a signing. So I think
I agree with you. I think Collins done a good job.
Yeah. If you want to complain, you'll say, well, the Zach Cassian contract. Yeah. Okay. Terrible contract. And then he traded him away, gave up 2 draft picks. It didn't crush his team. So I give Ken Holland lots of high marks. For what he's done at the pro scouting level and bringing in guys, you know, they're drafting, who knows, Philip Broberg. Now I'll admit, Tony, at that time I wrote Matt Boldy was the guy I would have taken because defensemen take longer to develop and Edmonton needed a big winger. Now Broberg still might be a good defenseman, but I haven't seen enough of him to really know what he is. And I think the challenge with Broberg,
were they picking again?
They were picking, what were they? 10th, 9th? Eighth. Well, yeah, it was eighth. And Boldy went 12th, I think it was.
My God. And Cole Caulfield went 15th to the Canadians.
Yeah, and you know, Cole Caulfield's a good shooter for sure. Zegras was there. Like, there were some good players available for sure.
Very good players.
Edmonton needed bigger size, though. They were a bunch of Smurf forwards at that time. So
yeah.
Cole Caulfield obviously now would fit in great in Edmonton, but you didn't know that, you know, at the time.
I know what you're thinking. Boldy would have been a poor man's Kachuk.
Yeah, 100%.
Right?
Yeah, well,
right?
That is not that. Well, maybe that'd be unbelievable.
No. But I mean,
like Boldy.
That's the ceiling. That's the ceiling, right? That's
Boldy's a good player. And Broberg might be good, Tony. But here's the thing. Where the Oilers are at, they are in win now mode. There's no doubt about it. They're a cup contender. I'll argue that to anybody. Whether they win or not, who knows? But Philip Broberg's development curve is because if he's going to play here next year, where does he play? You've got Nurse, Ekholm, and Kulak on your three left defense. I don't want to move any of them. Why would I? Makes no sense to me. So
I hear you.
Where does he play?
All right. Before Nathan MacKinnon won the Stanley Cup with Colorado, a lot of people around the league were looking at him saying, this guy he can't get it done in the playoffs. Yeah. A lot of people were saying that about Austin Matthews in Toronto. And after this year, they still are. If I was listening to Edmonton Sports Radio earlier today, and Connor McDavid's name came up, would people be saying the same thing or not?
Well, no. McDavid scored 2 points a game last year in the playoffs. Like, you look at his production. Him and Leon Draisaitl, historically, amongst any players in NHL history who played 45 or more playoff games, Draisaitl has the might be third now, but he was second ahead of Lemieux, and McDavid was fifth. So
there's nobody, and I know he's got 20 points or whatever it is, I think he's still number one in points, you know, even though he's eliminated. So no one in Edmonton today is questioning Connor McDavid's ability to get his team over the hump in the playoffs. That's not coming up at all.
That wasn't mentioned by anybody. No, I'd be flabbergasted by that.
No, well, it's brought up here in Montreal. I don't agree with it. I mean, I think Connor McDavid did everything that he absolutely can in his power to do. Unfortunately for the Edmonton Oilers, is they don't have 11 other Connor McDavids at the forward position. They don't have 6 Connor McDavids on the fence, and they don't have a Connor McDavid at goaltending. And if they don't need that.
Like, no team has that, right? Like, Tampa Bay was a freak, really, for a while.
You can't have that with a cap.
Yeah, well, Tampa had it. They were freakish because they had 3 elite forwards, a Hall of Fame defenseman, and a Hall of Fame goalie. And that's, you know,
a bunch of guys on injured reserve, and then once the playoffs started, then they were able to bring them back in the lineup, and the cap didn't count them. I mean, it's pretty brilliant, actually. All right, okay, so the window. I took a look very quickly. I think Darnell Nurse has like 6 years. I think Draisaitl's got a couple of years. I think McDavid's got 3 years and stuff. The window's not closed in Edmonton, right? I mean, people are still optimistic that the window...
No. There's like the minimum is 2 years, obviously the Draisaitl contract.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, it's funny in Toronto for years. It was like, oh, McDavid, he's going to leave. Yet they're crickets in their own market about Matthews. Why? Cause it's an idiotic statement. Like, let's call a spade. It's idiotic. There's nothing worse to me than fans or media in one market that rip on another market. They never have the guts to say the same thing about their own market. It's stupid. McDavid wasn't going to leave. There's no chance he was going to leave and ask for a trade 4 years into his career. Like, Mario Lemieux didn't get to the second round of the playoffs until his eighth year when they won. Like, you know, Ovechkin didn't get to the third round.
You know what it is, Jason? You know what it is? A lot of people look at the examples of actually players with star tags or superstar tags that go to teams and actually end up winning that Stanley Cup within 5 years. So then all of a sudden everyone gets, that has to happen. Unfortunately, you know what? It takes a long time to win a Stanley Cup sometimes. And unfortunately, you know what? There are some superstars who never won it, right? Gilbert Perreault never won the Stanley Cup and Marcel Dion never won the Stanley Cup. And guess what? If Raymond Bourque didn't go upstairs to this, you know, to the head office and say to the big boss's office and say, hey, you know what? Trade me. He wouldn't have won a Stanley Cup either. I mean, that's just the way it is, right? I hope for Connor McDavid that he's going to win a Stanley Cup, and I hope for Leon Draisaitl he's going to win a Stanley Cup, because, you know, you're going to get one or two idiots that are going to say, if they don't win the Stanley Cup, that they weren't that good because they weren't able to lead their teams to the cup. You know what I mean? And so more than any other reason, I really hope they win it.
Yeah, and that's fair. I think in our society now, we give too much credence for the vocal minority. And so, you know, if somebody said that, I'd be like, good for you. But even going back to your point, Tony, about guys who win right away, and the salary cap era is different. I don't care what happened in the 80s. It's different. You look at, so Sidney Crosby won 4 years in.
Yeah. Good.
And Patrick Kane. Anyone else? No. So, well, it's, to me, it's, so you have two guys who won. And
Jonathan Toews was on that team with...
Yeah, sure. But do they win without Kane?
No.
Right. He was the last piece, right? They won the lottery. They lucked out. They won the lottery. If they don't win the Patrick Kane lottery, Chicago's not winning three cups in 6 years.
No, correct.
Yeah. So,
and if the Penguins don't win the lottery and they don't get Sidney Crosby, they're not winning those three cups either.
100%. Right. And the other thing is, even when they got Kane, they had Taves, but they had Seabrook and Keith. And those guys were now 5 years into their careers, right?
Charlton was not too shabby either.
Yeah, they came in. And so, you know, good teams have, it's no surprise that when you go back and look at Stanley Cup winning teams, not all, but most, there's an exception, the Carolina Hurricanes, I think the St. Louis Blues, but most teams will have three Hall of Famers, right? That are future Hall of Famers minimum. Some have more, four or five. You go back, look at those great Montreal teams, the Islanders, the Oilers, look how many, like you're talking four, five, six, because you need lots of good guys in hockey. This isn't 100%. Basketball. Where your superstars play the majority of the game. So
you agree that to win the cup nowadays, you have to go through a rebuild. You have to draft, you know, that one or two franchise players if you want to get it done.
I think for the most part, yeah. Like St. Louis, maybe, but even Petrangelo was fourth overall, right? But they didn't have any really high picks. They had a really deep team, but they also, Tony,
They were an anomaly.
Yes, they were an anomaly. So
they
got hot in
the second half of the season. They were deep at center. They were deep at center. They had
a very good blue line, like huge. They had Ryan O'Reilly, four legit defensemen.
So who did they have? They had Ryan O'Reilly. They had Braden Schenn. They had Bozak.
Yeah, Tarasenko was a really good shooter. But then you
had Petrangelo. The centerman, though. I'm not sure if Robert Thomas played some center in those playoffs.
Yeah, he was a rookie. He was kind of starting out.
I think it was more Schenn, O'Reilly, and Bozak. It's three pretty good centermen.
Veteran guys, right? And then, but their defense to me was the difference. Like, Parayko, Petrangelo, Jay Bouwmeester, like they were all huge and mobile, and they just sucked the life out of everybody.
6'4", 6'5", 6'6", could skate like the wind. And by the way, they block shots like crazy.
Like Edmondson, who's a solid defender, he was like their number six.
Yeah. He was available to the Oilers, by the way, before the deadline, but they chose to get there.
No, I like Joel Edmondson. I think, God love him, his best days are behind him. He's injury prone. He's not a guy. No, like when Ekholm came about, and Ken Holland, you know, talked about that. That really kind of came about really in a week beforehand, right? And you know, they moved on it. They gave up a lot, right? Tyson Berry's a really good player, and Nashville is probably going to trade him for something. They gave up Reche for a first rounder and another first rounder, but their windows to win now. They needed
of course.
They needed, and I wouldn't be surprised, Tony, if they do another big move at next year's deadline.
They have to, you know, because like you said, if the window is at least 2 years, well, that puts a lot of urgency on next year. It really does. It's funny. George Larac is a regular collaborator on this podcast and usually joins us every Thursdays. And at one point, a couple of months ago, right before the deadline, he said that, you know, he told people close to the Oilers organization. He actually said that he was asked about Edmondson and he said, basically, don't touch him with a 10-foot pole. He's got a really bad back. And he's injury prone and he's declining. And everyone that's watching on the YouTube chat and the Facebook chat and the Twitter chat and stuff like that, they all got upset at George because why did you tell the Oilers that type of thing? But George said, come on, folks. I'm sure the Oilers knew without me telling them. I mean, it's not my fault that Joel Edmondson didn't get traded to Edmonton. I'm sure the Edmonton Oilers pay their scouts and everyone's watching and stuff like that. A quick and I so appreciate your time, and it's, I won't keep you much longer, but just your quick thoughts on what's transpired in Arizona.
You know what? I'm never one who wants to gloat and say, oh, they're terrible, just move them. Because you know what? There is a percentage of fans who love that. There's people who have jobs and lives, and I get it. Here's the thing, though. No one can say Gary Bettman didn't do everything in his power to give them ample opportunities to find their footing in Arizona.
Too much to the point where it's become stubbornness. Well, it's a detriment. It almost seems like it's an obsession that has led to something being detrimental. You're right about that.
Yeah, like Gary Bettman's stubbornness right now is hurting the team. I know for a fact that other teams, lots of owners, are disgusted by it because they're like, wait a sec here. You know, and the players themselves, they're like, this is lowering HRR. It, you know what? If you would have had just a normal functioning other 31st team, you know, the salary cap guaranteed would have gone up by $3 million this year. Guaranteed, yeah. Right? So players don't like it. Teams don't like it because now they're subsidizing. You basically got the one little, you know, weakling in the family who's just sucking on the teat of everybody else. And so I think enough's enough. You know, I heard today they're like, hey, we still think it's going to work. And that's fine. I expect the ownership to say all that stuff. But here's the facts. Number one, they're the 11th biggest market when it comes to TV. But I don't care. No one watches. Look at their actual TV numbers. I don't give two squirts that you're in a market that has the 11th biggest amount of televisions. If no one's watching, it doesn't matter. And no one's watching the Coyotes in Arizona.
No.
It just doesn't happen. And that sucks. I know people that work for the organization. They're great people, but they've had their chance. It's never really worked. And, you know, there's other markets like Quebec City would be the first choice. I know
the ownership group's never been stable there. It changes as this, as that. It's involved in scandal. It's involved in this. And by the way, they've been in like a 13-year rebuild or whatever it is. And I'm exaggerating the number, whatever. It seems like they rebuild all the time, and they rebuild and then they trade and they rebuild. Like, for example, when they traded Chychrun, I mean, Chychrun's still a good young defenseman. Like, is that the kind of guy that you trade if you're still in a rebuild? But it's almost like they're you know, they rebuild so often that it's almost getting to the point where they trade 24 and 25 year old players to rebuild again. It's insane.
Yeah, well, Chychrun had asked for a trade for 3 years, right?
So, yeah,
because players know I got no chance to compete here. We've got more money on LTIR guys who aren't playing, so we can get to the cap floor. Like, it's Mickey Mouse. It's not a good look for the league. Yeah. And I just think, sorry, Arizona. I just think it's time that they move on. You had a chance. Hey. Maybe, hey, Colorado got hockey again years later, and it's done incredibly well. So if it's a better time in the future, awesome for you, but I just don't think now's the time.
You and Frank Saravalli having fun with the Daily Faceoff?
Oh, yeah, it's good. You can wind Frank up pretty easily, Tony, so I love
it. Yeah, listen, it's not everyone that hosts and or co-hosts a podcast that agrees to go on other podcasts, which I find is very old school mentality, all right, when they do that, because the fact of the matter is, when everyone helps each other, everyone comes out stronger. I've always felt that way. And so I thank you for taking the opportunity to join me on the Sick Podcast. And I have no problem telling everyone watching right now that you need to watch Jason Gregor and you need to watch Frank Saravalli and you need to follow dailyfaceoff.com, which is the website where you can find all the line combinations, and you need to watch and listen to their podcast because it's an excellent, excellent podcast. And I want them to do great, and I want me to do great too. I want us all to do great. That's what it is.
Hey, Tony, I'm with you, man. You and I have been doing this for many years. And anytime, I love it. And you know what? Have a lot of fun doing that. And, you know, slugging out the radio show still. I'm lucky because I own my own show. So I'm kind of unique. So it makes it.
That's right. Hey, listen, a lot of people don't know that, right? But you know, and I'm going to mention it now because A, you just did, and B, it's because it's already been in the papers, right? There was already an article about it. But most people that work sports radio are paid employees. Jason basically owns his own show. I don't know how did that come about for you when it's like, considering it's a pretty big company. And I don't think they have that deal with anybody else. So how did that deal come? Or maybe they do. How did that deal come around? Well, you don't.
Hey, Tony, so I graduated.
So basically, what you have to Do they
I rent my airtime from the station.
Okay, so they charge you for the airtime. You go out, you get your own sponsors, which end up paying the airtime.
They get a certain percentage of the minutes, and then I get the rest. And then so it's a collaboration. You know what? It's worked really well with now it's Bell Media. It started out with Slate and Astral and different ones. And so it's kind of being grandfathered in. When I grew up, you probably heard of John Short. Well, yeah. when I started, that's what John did at Oldies 1260. And so I never even knew that was a possibility. And then I kind of tripped into it a little bit. And back in 05, my first show that I owned was 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. And I'm like, hey, if I can sell this, then I can sell anything. So, you know, and I was not a salesman. I don't think I'm a salesman now. But, you know, I'm lucky because Edmonton is a diehard sports market. They love sports. They love the Roaders. Really they hate the Roaders at times. Football, soccer, any sport, anytime. That's cool. And it, it works
CPL,
really well.
The CPL didn't last there, unfortunately, which is unfortunate. But amateur soccer is strong in Edmonton, but the CPL didn't last there.
No, it's too bad. Like, there's a lot of reasons why. I think, you know, at times ownership wasn't great.
Yeah.
I don't think the city helped them out a ton either. I think it's one where, you know, I think if you could get in the league, if you could ever have an expansion team to join Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal, that, you know, that's the only way you could ever consider doing it again. I'm not sure there's an appetite for it or not, but there is a huge soccer community here now more than ever. Like, soccer is growing. It helps Alfonso Davies from Edmonton. So that's grown the soccer community significantly. I know you loved soccer, Tony. I grew up, it's probably the sport I was best at. I've definitely got an appreciation for it more now than I probably ever have in my life. And, you know, I would love to see him. Like, I'm a sports guy. Like, I did this play-by-play for lacrosse for 10 years. I loved it. I love the NLL. I'd love to see soccer in Edmonton, but the only way it would probably work now is, you know, if the Oilers own the team. You know, that's probably the only way I see it happen.
Hey, so my buddy George Larac, when he was in Edmonton last week, he got himself a pretty big applause. Hey, I saw him on the Jumbotron. They were going crazy.
Oh, hey, buddy, George, dude, you know how it is in those. George is a huge fan favorite in Edmonton because for a variety, what he did on the ice is one reason.
Yeah.
But George did so much community work. He met, like, literally George might know half the city. And I'm not even joking about that. He's an ultra friendly person. He would go to the Stollery Hospital on his own just because to go in there. He's a big personality. You know, George, he's like a big kid, and I mean that in a compliment. He's always he's always smiling. He's having fun.
Oh yeah.
You know, doesn't take himself too serious. You know, if you see him next, just ask him about how terrible he was at shooting tape balls in the garbage. It's still the greatest gag him and I have. Like, he's like, I never miss, and he would miss all the time. It was so awesome.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story. You're gonna love this one. Okay, I'll tell you a funny George story. So the Canadians have someone working for them in their community relations department by the name of Genevieve Paquette. All right. Yeah. And Genevieve is absolutely fantastic at her job. And when George signed on with the Montreal Canadiens, he told Genevieve when he met her, he said, she introduced herself and said, I'm Genevieve Paquette and I'm in charge of community relations and the Montreal Canadiens Foundation and stuff like that. And she says, I'll be reaching out every now and then and stuff like that, whatever. And he said to her, he said, no, reach out to me often. I want to do as many community events as possible. Like, it's just, it'll always be, yes, I'm always there. I'm always there. And so shortly thereafter, after George Larac signs with the Montreal Canadiens, Genevieve Paquette's phone is like, just it's ringing off the hook, like nonstop. He put her cell phone number on his personal website. If you want me to show up to your event, call Genevieve.
Oh God, there's George. Just a classic. Eh?
She was pretty surprised. George and I, we go way back. It's he had reached out to me at one point when he was playing with the Canadians, and there was that earthquake in Haiti, and he had reached out to me and he says, Tony, I'm just wondering if we can maybe do something on the radio. I'm thinking that if we can auction off maybe a package of tickets I'll do a meet and greet with the person who buys the tickets, or I can get, you know, a player of their choice to be part of the meet and greet, and the proceeds from that, I mean, I'll send towards Haiti and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I said, sure. I mean, I'd love to help out in any way, shape, or form. And so we were communicating, we're talking back and forth. And, he shows up at the rink and they tell him it's over, right? It's over. We're buying you out.
Oof.
So I get the news over the wire. Back then it was the wire, yeah, right? We used to have these news feeds. I get the news over the wire. And mind you, back then, I mean, Twitter was around. I mean, I probably got over Twitter. I don't remember if I got over the wire or Twitter, whatever. Anyway, we got the news. And I'm like, oh, I'm hosting my show right on the radio. And I'm like, well, George Larac has just been bought out by the Montreal Canadiens. As I announce it, he walks into studio and he sits down right in front of me.
I'm looking at him
and I'm like, no, he didn't. He showed up because he wanted to drop off the tickets that we had talked about and stuff like that. He didn't know now if he was going to get a chance. He wasn't going to be part of the meet and greet because he was bought out. And so he said, here's the tickets to the game. And he waited for me to go to commercial break. Here's the tickets to the game. And I can still set it up and they can still meet whichever players they want to meet and stuff like that. But I won't be there at the game and stuff. And no, he didn't. I had asked him, you want to come on? And he didn't want to come on because, you know, he was told not to talk, because if he was going to talk, he wasn't going to get paid. He was still under contract. Right.
Right.
But, I don't know, remember if it's Guy Carboneau and or Bob Gainey, they have the press conference to talk about buying out George Larac. And he and I are watching it together. And this entire time, I can't say anything on air. I don't want to make it look like George is in studio with me, because then I'm going to start getting a lot of heat from a lot of people saying, I can't believe he was in studio with you and you didn't make him talk, right? Obviously, yeah. I wanted him to talk, but the guy knows if he talks, he's not going to get paid. He'd rather make $1 million than make my radio show famous for 2 minutes and talk. But anyway, so George and I, we go way back. There's a few stories. There's a few good ones.
And well, Tony, if you have any really good dirt on George, we're doing a celebrity roast for Kevin Lowe. We do it for Kids Sport, different people every year.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And I'm the roast master, and George is one of the roasters coming into town.
Oh,
and
really?
So I get to rip on all of them. Obviously, we rip mostly on Kevin.
Yes.
But, you got any good dirt on George?
I don't have any dirt on George, but I don't understand how someone who can eat salad and tofu all day weighs 300 pounds. Like, I just,
dude, well, I when he told me he was vegan, I asked him, did you eat him? So that's what I was like.
I don't get. Hey, here's one last one. Here's one last one. And what time is it in Edmonton right now? It's 9:19. It's 2 hours.
Yeah, 9:19. You're way later than me.
Yeah. So I was for a second there, I was feeling guilty because I'm like, I got this guy late. Now I just realized 9:19. I got bad news, Jason. You and I are going to go on for another 2 hours because. here's another one, and it's the last one. He hosts his own radio show on BPM Sports. He's on Monday to Friday. From 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. I'm a collaborator on that French, on that all sports radio station in French.
Yeah,
I'm part of the morning show. I went in probably in studio about two months ago. And I don't know if you know this, by the way, he's on the air once again at 11. Do you know what time he gets the studio at?
7.
He gets the studio at 6 o'clock in the morning for an 11 o'clock show.
Wow.
At 6 a.m. He wakes up at like 4:30 in the morning, goes to bed at like 9:30 at night or whatever it is. He only stays up late on Thursday nights when he's actually on my podcast. But, and he's in a hurry to get off. He always says 20 minutes, bro, please. So anyway, I see him and he's like sluggish. Like he's like this, like in his chair, like just down like this. And I'm like, this guy's about to pass out. And I'm like, George, are you all right, buddy? He goes, yeah, just, you know, I'm fasting. So I said, okay, you're fasting. What are you doing? You're doing 16:8. You're doing 18:6. You're doing 24. How many hours are you on? How many hours are you off? He says, I haven't eaten in 8 days. I said, I beg your pardon? He says, I haven't eaten in 8 days. It's an 8-day fast so far. I'm going to 9 days. I said, why in the world would you do that? So he said, no, it's good for you. Look it up. The 70% of the cancer cells leave your body and stuff like that and whatever. And so I'm like, what? And then he goes, yeah, what are you eating? So what? Nothing. Well, do you protein shake something? No, it's water. Water, just electrolytes, water, whatever. Just, So I went home. I told my wife, I said, George Larac, he's on an 8-day fast. She looks at me. She goes, you're so stupid, Tony. Nobody does a fasting for 8 days. I said, sweetie, I swear to you, he's doing an 8-day fast. And she goes, Tony, he probably purees his food. So I say, you know, I'm calling him right now. I'm telling you. So I put him on speakerphone. I said, George, my wife and I were driving around. You're on speakerphone. George, what have you eaten in the last 8 days? Nothing. You pureed any food? No. You're doing an 8-day fast, correct? Yes. So what's the only thing you're having? Water. Anything else? No, only water. No food? No. No puree? No nothing? No. I look at my wife. We hang up the phone. My wife says, I hope you're never going to do that, she says to me. I said, me? How do you want me to do an 8-day fast? I'm thinking about food 24 hours a day. So anyway.
Dude, I don't think I could do it. Well, 8 hours when I'm sleeping, but
yeah,
I'm not a big faster. I just eat healthy.
There's a good for you. By the way, you look healthy, man. What do you eat?
You know what, buddy? Well, hey, I'm lucky. My wife's really cooked, but we eat a lot of fruit and vegetables and you know, a lot of meat. Now, my wife and I do have a sweet tooth. That's our thing. But I have a 9-year-old son, so I'm active. I'm coaching him in hockey and ball hockey, so I'm moving around. But
sweet
I tooth. Eat healthy breakfast all the time. We've really got away from most processed food. That's the big thing.
Good. Listen, you look great. You sound great. I'm happy to catch up with you. I hope we could talk more often. Like you said, when I was doing radio and you're still kicking at it, we used to go on each other's shows all the time. So it's been a while. Thanks for coming on the Sick Podcast. I appreciate it, buddy.
Anytime, Tony. Have a good one. Enjoy all the draft.
There you have it. Jason Gregor, 1260 AM out of Edmonton, and the dailyfaceoff.com and the Daily Faceoff Podcast with Frank Cellervalli. What a guy. Real good guy. Always like Jason a lot. All right. If you like the podcast, like it, share it with your friends, and comment sick, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K. I also want to give a special shout out to the boys and girls over at Collège Français. They had their annual awards for the student athletes earlier this evening. And I had the pleasure, honor, and privilege of being the MC for the event. And you know what? When it was all said and done, and it went for about 2 hours, and that's why I thought I was going to lose my voice. I didn't think I was going to have a voice left. But this is how we ended the award ceremony tonight. Look at this. There you have it, in Brossard at Le Théâtre de l'Étoile in the Quartier des Trente. 900 people chanting sick. You've got to start somewhere. And here's hoping that 900 is going to be 9,000. And 9,000 is going to end up being 90,000. It's going to end up being 900,000 at one point. I would settle with 900,000 people like a... Yeah, 900,000 people, 900,000 subscribers on YouTube would be nice. It would really, really be nice. Sick has taken over. We even infiltrated the South Shore now. We're taking over. We're taking over Montreal. We're taking over Quebec. We're taking over Canada. If you enjoy the Sick Podcast on Google, Apple, Spotify, leave us a 5-star review. It's our way of feeling the love. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same place. And most likely with George Larac, who's a regular contributor on Thursday, and we'll probably add someone else to the mix. For Agnello and Sammy and Master Control, they're Cavallaro. I'm Marinaro.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group, driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature.